From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief. Chloe here. July 29th. Health and longevity in 10. Let's begin with what changed my mind this week. Let's get into it. First, from Monger Bay. Rare palm tree rediscovered in Madagascar after nearly 100 years. Researchers have tracked down 28 individuals of a palm tree species last recorded in Madagascar nearly 100 years ago. Nearly every tree of the species, Ravenea latisecta, was found within four protected areas in the Andasibe-Mantadia region of Madagascar, according to a recent study. Andasibe-Mantadia is one of Madagascar's best explored botanical regions, and Ravenea latisecta is not an inconspicuous plant. It is a palm several metres tall. Luis Oreglia, study-led author with Aix-Marseille University in France, told Monger Bay by email. Next, second, from Monger Bay. Indonesian zoo corruption case renews scrutiny of animal welfare. An alleged corruption case at Indonesia's Surabaya Zoo has renewed scrutiny of how the country's wildlife conservation institutions are governed, and prompted experts to warn that financial misconduct can have consequences that extend beyond public finances to the welfare of animals entirely dependent on human care. The investigation has also reignited calls for stronger oversight and accountability to ensure conservation institutions protect both public resources and the wildlife entrusted to them. Up next, third, from Monger Bay. Tech helps Vietnam rangers turn the tide on poaching. In Vietnam's Phu Mat National Park, an anti-poaching unit is using high-tech tools to combat wildlife poaching. The unit, formed in 2018 through a partnership between Save Vietnam's Wildlife and the park, previously relied on 70 forest rangers to monitor over 1,300 hectares of rugged terrain. Rangers recorded information in written notes, but now use smart software on GPS-enabled smartphones to track routes, wildlife observations, and snare locations, creating structured data to identify trafficking hotspots. The unit also employs poacher cams, cameras installed at forest entry points, ridge crossings, or trails frequently used by hunters. These cameras help the unit understand people's movements through the forest and identify potential illegal activities. In one instance, a camera captured footage of a man entering the forest with a gun, and after being spoken to by authorities, he voluntarily surrendered his hunting gun. The use of smart software and poacher cams has improved the unit's ability to monitor and respond to poaching activity. The structured data from SMART allows for strategic planning and identification of trafficking hotspots, while the cameras provide valuable insights into people's movements and potential illegal activities. The anti-poaching unit's efforts have shown promise in reducing wildlife poaching in the park. While the exact impact is not specified, the use of high-tech tools has undoubtedly enhanced the unit's capabilities and improved its ability to respond to poaching activity. The success of this approach suggests that the integration of technology and on-the-ground patrols can be an effective way to combat wildlife poaching. However, it's worth noting that the unit's efforts are likely to be part of a broader strategy to address the complex issue of wildlife poaching in Vietnam. And then, fourth, from phys.org. The cost of memory, how organisms balance thinking and sensing. So I was reading about how memory works in living organisms, and it's pretty interesting. Basically, remembering the past can be super helpful for making good decisions, but it also costs energy and resources. This is true for everything from animals searching for food to single cells responding to their environment. The idea is that storing and using information takes up resources that could be used for other things, like finding food or avoiding predators. So it's not always clear when it's worth using those resources for memory. It's a trade-off, and different organisms seem to balance it in different ways. This balance is something that's been studied in a few different contexts, including in animals and in single cells. One study found that some animals will actually forget certain things when they're not relevant anymore, which helps them conserve resources. It's a pretty clever system, and it's not something that I had thought about before. It's also worth noting that this balance can be influenced by the environment that an organism is in. For example, if an organism is in a pretty stable environment, it might not need to use as many resources for memory. But if it's in an environment that's changing a lot, it might need to use more resources to keep up. Overall, it's a pretty complex topic, but it's also really interesting to think about how different organisms balance the cost of memory with the benefits it provides. Next. Fifth, from phys.org. Mosquitoes are rapidly activating enzymes against common insecticide, researchers warn. A recent study found that mosquitoes can rapidly activate enzymes to counteract common insecticides, making them less effective over time. This isn't a new phenomenon. It's been happening for decades as public health programs rely heavily on chemicals to manage mosquito populations. Those chemicals can trigger biochemical and genetic variations in mosquitoes, giving some a survival advantage. As a result, mosquito control efforts are becoming increasingly difficult. It's a bit like antibiotic resistance in bacteria. The more we use chemicals, the more mosquitoes adapt and find ways to resist them. Up next, sixth, from Monger Bay. Bill Oddy brought bird watching into millions of homes. So I was reading about Bill Oddy, who just passed away at 85. He was a well-known TV personality, especially from his comedy days with the Goodies back in the 1970s. But what's really interesting is that he was also super into bird watching, and he made it accessible to a huge audience through his TV shows. He had this way of presenting that made you feel like you were right there with him, waiting to spot a bird. He started bird watching pretty young, actually, and was already contributing to birding reports and writing articles about it by his early 20s. Later on, he combined his knowledge of birds with his TV experience to create shows like Birding with Bill Oddy, where he'd take viewers on tours of different landscapes and help them identify birds. His shows were pretty low-key, but that was part of the charm. He'd just be out in a garden or a park, binoculars in hand, waiting for a bird to appear. And when it did, he'd get really excited, which was infectious. He made it seem like anyone could start bird watching, and that you didn't need a lot of fancy equipment to do it. Oddy's TV shows covered more than just birds too. He did programs on all sorts of wildlife, and even had a show called Wild in Your Garden, which encouraged people to get involved in conservation in their own backyards. He was all about making nature accessible and fun, and it sounds like he had a really big impact on a lot of people. And then, seventh, from phys.org. First Arctic Ocean 2050 expedition on its way to the North Pole. So, a research vessel called the Kronprins Haakon just set off from this tiny town in Norway called Longyearbyen, headed for the North Pole. It's got a crew of around 50 people, including 30 researchers who will be studying the Arctic Ocean over the next 50 days. They're part of a bigger program called Polhavet 2050, which is all about understanding the changes happening in the Arctic due to climate change. This expedition is a big deal because it's the first of its kind, and it'll give us some really valuable insights into what's going on up there. Next. Eighth, from New Atlas, Autonomous Intern Review. It does nearly everything you can. It's a tiny 3D printed pyramid that houses a Raspberry Pi 5 with 4GB RAM, a cooling fan, and an LED beacon. So it looks a bit like a miniature casino tower. The hardware is modest, but the custom Linux stack boots straight into OpenClaw, letting you drop in your own AI agents and have them run tasks automatically. There's no fancy hardware beyond the Pi, so performance is limited to what that board can handle. And the autonomous claim really means you can script agents rather than the device doing anything truly self-directed. It's a neat sandbox for hobbyists who want a ready-made platform to experiment with LLM-driven agents, but don't expect a high-throughput server. Up next. Ninth, from fizz.org. AI technology sees through leaves to transform horticulture. So researchers at the University of Canterbury have been working on an AI system that can see through leaves to detect and measure fruit, even when it's hidden behind a lot of foliage. This technology uses computer vision to identify the fruit and track its progress over time. The team, led by Professor Richard Green, thinks this could be a game changer for horticulture, making it easier to monitor crop health and yield. The system is still in development, but it has the potential to save farmers time and money by automating the process of monitoring their crops. Right now, farmers often have to manually check on their fruit, which can be time-consuming and labour-intensive. This new technology could make that process a lot more efficient. It's based on a pretty simple idea, using cameras to take pictures of the plants, and then using AI to analyse those pictures and identify the fruit. The tricky part is getting the AI to see through the leaves and accurately measure the fruit, even when it's partially hidden. But if it works, it could be a really useful tool for farmers. The researchers are still testing the system and working out the kinks, so it's not ready for widespread use just yet. But they're hopeful that it could make a big difference in the horticulture industry, and they're excited to see where this technology takes them. It's worth noting that this is a relatively small study, and we'll need to see more research to know for sure how well this technology works in different situations. But it's definitely an interesting idea, and it could have some big implications for the way we grow and harvest fruit. And then, 10th, from The Complexity Edge. You don't need stronger boundaries. It's an essay rather than a new study, so the ideas are drawn from clinical observation and the author's experience with avoidant or highly self-protective people. The main point is that setting stricter boundaries often misses the mark for folks who already keep a tight guard. For those who tend to withdraw, the growth step isn't adding more walls, but opening tiny, intentional cracks. What the author calls unboundaries. These are small, purposeful moments of sharing that keep your autonomy intact while signalling you're willing to connect. Think of it as selective permeability. You stay self-sufficient, but you let in a little trust, a brief invitation, or a gentle disclosure. The goal is to make your presence legible to others without feeling exposed or losing the safety you've built. If you notice yourself avoiding intimacy, preferring solitude, or feeling that any extra boundary feels redundant, trying these tiny openings could be a practical way to practice connection while honouring the independence you value. That's the read. Small inputs, compounding results. Back tomorrow. New here? Grab your own free feed at storyflow.com. It only takes a few seconds.